Welcome to Covered, a conversation about books with the people who write them. I'm your host, Harry Marks, and today's guest is romance author Megan Erickson. Megan's written novels ranging from new adult to adult fiction, and her third book in her popular Bowler University series is scheduled to release in early 2015. Megan, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
My pleasure, thanks for coming on. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the Bowler University series?
The Bowler University series, I usually describe as kind of fun and sexy. I really tried to capture how I felt when I was in college, which was overall, it was a lot of fun. And I kind of wanted to capture that time where you're learning how you fit into the world. And also, since I write romance, what kind of person you want to be in a relationship. So I've really had a lot of fun writing it. I think it's fun to read too.
Can you read a little something from the first book just to get people started?
Yeah, that's the one I have in front of me, so that's good. Okay, let me go. This is a short passage that I think I had included when we released the cover. Let me start. Well, the main character is Kat Caruso. And her love interest in the book is Alex Stone, and this is when they first meet. Well, she's met him in the past, but this is the first moment in the book where they meet. She gathered her books and stuffed them into her plaid Burberry messenger bag, then headed toward the front doors, smoothie from the library snack shop in hand. Head bent, fiddling with the clasp of her bag, she stumbled into a wall of human on the pavement outside. "Oh, I'm sorry." Her voice dropped out when she realized the solid flesh belonged to Alec, Max's best friend. She'd only met him once or twice before he'd moved in with Max this semester, and every time he cocked his head with a frown like he knew something she didn't, which he actually did since he had brainy superpowers, smarter than a speeding Einstein, able to leap over C-minus students like her in a single bound. She didn't trust people that smart, and she didn't trust a guy who didn't ogle her ass or leer at her boobs like every other member of the straight male species on the planet. Right now, that raised eyebrow frown pinned her where she stood. His pale green eyes behind thick black frames roamed over her shoulder to the library and then back to her. With his pinstripe button-down, dark jeans with Converse shoes, and hair styled in a short, messy pompadour, he looked like a nerdy Elvis. His frown morphed into a smile when he spotted the smoothie in her hand, and she definitely didn't notice his full lips. "You know, you don't have to venture into the forbidden zone just to get a smoothie." "Ooh, the jerk." She glanced around surreptitiously. Then leaned in and spoke in a low voice, "Just play it cool. Don't let it slip anyone like me snuck in the library." She gripped his forearm and whispered, "Password today is Rosebud." His face blanked and he looked at her like he'd never seen her before. Kat debated whether or not that was an improvement over his other look, but then those intelligent eyes narrowed and a smirk curled his lips. "I know, we nerds get an email every morning." "See, he always needed the last word." She propped a hand on her hip and leaned in. "Well, sounds like you have a mole. Might want to look into that." He opened his mouth, but she cut him off. "Just looking out for you guys. Anyway, see you around." Before he could shoot back a snarky comeback, Kat skirted around him and bounded down the stairs. She chalked that up as Kat 1, Alex 0.
Great. How much of your college experience is in these books?
You know, it's funny because a lot of what I base, like in the first book, Alec lives in a townhouse with two other guys. And I really, that townhouse to me is the one I lived in when I was a junior or senior. When did I move? Oh, junior. And I even like described this like a horribly like floral couch, which I totally had that. And you know, in the second book, actually, there's a couple things like, there was like a theme party where they're like at a beach and the guy had like brought in sand. And, I've been to theme parties when I was in college. So yeah, I guess a lot of it, you know, I didn't write me and the characters aren't me, but I would say I definitely drew from my own, I guess, like periphery experiences to get the atmosphere of college, if that makes sense.
So speaking of your experiences, in your first book, the main character Kat does suffer from dyslexia.
Yes.
And so I was wondering why did you give her that condition? Was that something you struggled with growing up?
Yeah, no, it isn't. It's funny because I get that question all the time. People ask, you know, do you have ADD or do you have dyslexia? And I say, no, I didn't. I just was really, I know that a lot of learning disabilities do not get diagnosed really by no fault of anyone. It's just sometimes they're just not recognized, or a student is really good at hiding them or something. And it really, you know, affects them as, you know, sometimes you can kind of squeak by in middle school and high school, but when you get to college and you're really completely on your own when it comes to classes, you know, no one's holding your hand. It's a really different experience. And I just kind of had the idea, like, what if there was, you know, a girl there that kind of always masked her intellectual insecurities with, maybe kind of like a very, you know, sexual presence, and how that would, you know, how that would affect, her. And then what would happen once she found out there was actually a reason for all the times she struggled in school. And then I also kind of wanted to talk about why or how, you know, sometimes your self-esteem can affect your relationship choices. Because at the beginning of the book, she's with a guy who doesn't treat her very well because she doesn't really think she, you know, is worth a whole lot. You know, she's very insecure about her intelligence, I guess I would say. And she's not stupid, obviously. She just has dyslexia.
Right. What kind of research went into giving her that condition?
My mom's a teacher, so I talked to her about kind of how you would sort of notice that even in younger children. I talked to, a woman I know who has dyslexia. And she, you know, I sent her like a whole email full of questions and she wrote back. Same with her too. She wasn't diagnosed until later in her, academic career. And that really, really did affect how it was actually, she had a kind of interesting experience because her and her brother have dyslexia. Hers wasn't ever really noticed until very late. And it really did affect her self-esteem through school. Whereas her brother, they noticed that he had dyslexia much earlier and he is doing much better because he has, you know, special attention and things like that. And then I obviously just did tons of online research. I talked to teachers and I looked up essays often written by kids that have dyslexia. And that was really interesting. They talked about different study techniques. Like Kat, in the book, it has to be pretty organized when it comes to her classwork. Like she kind of like has to schedule when she works on everything. And she has like color-coded highlighters. And I actually drew that directly from an essay I read by a teenager who was dyslexic. And that's how she dealt with it. And Kat did deal with it that way. It's just she didn't realize why.
Now, I have Make It Right. I haven't read it yet. That's your second book in the series.
Yes.
But do any of the characters also have something similar? Do they also face some sort of adversity like Kat?
Yeah, well, I have the heroine. Her name's Leah. She actually was in a car accident when she was younger, and she has very bad scarring on her one leg, and she also walks with a limp. Whereas I don't really make that the focus of her character. I kind of describe it as she had more of her like rebellious stage, I guess, when she was in high school, and she's really come to accept herself, but it still has changed the way she views people. You know, she doesn't want anyone to put her down because she actually is pretty confident and she doesn't think she deserves that. And then my male character, his name's Max. His father always had expectations of Max that Max didn't ever think he fit. And so, you know, he always kind of feels like he has to prove himself and he doesn't really ever think he gets it right. And so he kind of has to come to terms with what he wants as opposed to what his father wants. And he has to be, I guess you could say, yeah, he has to like learn what he's confident about for himself.
This series is considered new adult. And to people listening to the podcast, they may not know what new adult is. It really came into its own, I'd say, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but in the last couple of years.
No, I would say that, yeah.
Okay. Now, many articles have been written about what new adult is, and mm-hmm. many of them distill it down to, and a lot of these articles are written by people who haven't written new adult. Many of them distill it down to basically young adult with sex, which is pretty inaccurate if you read new adult books.
Yeah.
How would you describe new adult?
Yeah, see, in my opinion, and maybe this is not the way everyone, I bet some people that even read it think it's just YA with sex, but I mean, my books do have sex scenes in them, but that's just because to me that fits the characters and that's part of, I think, where they are in their lives, that they're, you know, sexually active.
Right.
But in my opinion, how I view new adult, I really think it's all about the themes in the book. Excuse me, I view young adult as a coming of age, like trying to determine who you are as a person. That's young adult. And in my opinion, new adult is also a coming of age. But it's, you kind of know what kind of person you are, but you're trying to figure out how that person fits into the world. So meaning how that person fits into, you know, your first job, your first real relationship. So it's more instead, because I think when you're a teenager, that's kind of being a teenager. You're very like self-centered. Your view is a little narrow. So you're really, you know, I think in young adult books, learning who you are. But like I said, in new adult, it's more who you are and how that fits into the world.
Now, what pulled you into writing new adult?
Well, I read it and I liked it. I wanted to write what I wanted to read. And I like books that maybe have a little bit of humor and are a little bit playful. And basically that's why I wrote it. Cause I just had an idea and I wouldn't say I necessarily set out to write anything with an agenda. I just had this idea, about Kat and about a learning disability. And then I just went with it and it ended up being new adult. And but then, like I said, I did want to write new adult that like I wanted to read.
Well, that's a great philosophy. A lot of writers will say that if you're not seeing what you want to read, write it yourself.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I completely agree with that too.
What was the process like with your first book from the time you wrote it or even from its inception until an agent picked it up and then the publisher?
Right. Well, I obviously had written, I actually self-published an adult romance beginning of 2013. And then I actually wrote basically three books. That was like a series, but they're not very good. And I tried to query the first one and rejections around the board. And I look back on it now and I see a lot of reasons that it should have been rejected. And part of me wants to thank everyone who rejected it because I don't think it would have been a very strong debut.
Yep. I know that feeling.
Yeah. You know, I think, and that's okay. I learned a lot from it. I don't regret querying it or anything. I would love to share my query someday for like everything that's like wrong with querying, because I realized my entire query is just like a bunch of like themes. Like literally I'm like, you know, he wanted the roses, not the thorns. I mean, really, what was I doing? So, okay. So you know, I wrote that and I was, you know, I liked it. I liked the series, but this idea for Kat kind of hit me and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go for that. I really think it kind of has like a good hook. So I started writing it the beginning of 20. Oh, you know what? I don't even know the years. It doesn't matter. I started writing it, I remember like the beginning of the year, and I had written a couple chapters. And at the time, I was pregnant with my second child. So I had to kind of stop writing it because, you know, the inconvenient having a baby thing and all. So
yep,
I stopped writing it. And yeah, right? You know. So I stopped writing it, and I had my child. And I really kind of told myself, like, you're really going to try it, because I was a stay-at-home mom with my first kid. And so I was like, you're really going to take a maternity leave. So take a maternity leave and then get back to writing. And I really did bounce back much quicker after the second kid. So I did. I kind of took like a 6-8 week maternity leave and then I started writing again. I finished it up, I think, in like July. And I spent a long time editing it and rewriting it. And then I began querying. And I really faced some my book is written in third person. And at the time when I queried, I really seemed to get a lot of agents who said, most new adult is written in first. Like, this isn't, you know, like, I mean, they barely even read it. They're just like, oh, I see it. It's in third. I'm not really that interested.
Right. Not only first, but first person present. I see a lot of.
Oh yeah. First person present. Correct. And mine is third person past.
Right.
I was like, well, this is the way I want to write it. Like, I still stand by, I change point. I mean, I have books coming out next year that are in first person. It's not that I don't want to write that. It's just that to me, this series was a third person series the way mm-hmm. I wanted to write it. So, but I was, I thought, well, I'm not changing it because this is the way I wanted to write it. And also it was a little bit lighter, I think, than other books that were out. And I also, not everyone probably gets my humor. That's okay. and so I queried for a while and I was getting bites. Don't get me wrong. I was getting some fools, but it was still, it's really hard. I mean, the query trenches are, it's hard. It really yeah. is. I mean, it thickens your skin. I will say it's makes you a better person, I think. I mean, you really.
I I agree, and I feel like even if you plan on self-publishing, every author needs to feel that, because if you're not going to get rejected by an agent, you're going to get rejected by a reader or a critic or someone. So, you know, to get that early on and to understand, you know, not everything you do is perfect, even though your mom and your brother and your uncle all say it is, I think that's good for the writer.
Yeah, I have to admit, I see a lot. I don't want to judge anyone, and all our publishing paths are individual and different. But I will say sometimes if I see a person saying, I'm going to self-publish my book, and they've never queried, and they're like, I had like a couple of my friends read it, I kind of want to weep for them because I'm like, please, maybe get someone you don't know, find some beta readers. And it's not even they'll help you make your book better, because they will. But I really think it is beneficial to have that experience of rejection. I mean, you almost really have to, because it's hard. Once you put that book out too, people are not going to like it. I mean, I get reviews that love it, and I get reviews that are just like, ugh, you know, mm-hmm. I've gotten reviews that, and that's okay. The great thing about literature, and then we can talk about it and why you like it and why you don't. But, it's hard. It's hard. So, you know, querying was really tough, and I was at the point, I was querying only agents.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the time that book was called Switching Numbers. It's gone through like three titles, but at the time that Make Account was called Switching Numbers. And I entered a contest on Twitter, like a pitch contest, where, you know, interested agents or editors favorite your tweet about your book in 140 characters.
Yep, done a couple of those, yeah.
Yeah, which is actually really hard to do. I will say that I don't think that works for every book. I really don't. I think there are some books that you try to condense it to 140 characters and it just doesn't work.
Yep.
I fully believe that. I think it's a good practice. I think it's interesting to try, but I don't think all books are successful to do it that way. Even my book was a little weird. It made it sound like there was a love triangle and stuff like that. But that's beside the point. So it got favorited by an editor and I sent it off to her and I kind of wasn't really thinking about it. And then like a month or two later, she calls me and she offered to publish the book. And at that point I had some queries out to agents. So of course you have to contact the agents. And then I got two agents that offered rep. And I talked to them. I picked one. And then we also then had some other interested publishers, and I ultimately ended up going with a different publisher. But yeah, so it was a fun journey. It was weird. You know, people say, you know, publishing is hurry up and wait. And it really is. It's hurry up and wait, or it's feast or famine. I really feel that way.
Yeah, I noticed with Make It Count, it felt like I was seeing a lot of build up to the release, and then build up to the next one that was about to come out in several months. It felt like they were really pushing them out quickly.
Oh yeah, and I think they actually even wanted them a little bit closer, but my agent was kind of like, "Oh man, this is her first series. Let's take it easy on her." But they really. And even now, I kind of feel like there's finally a lull, but. But then the ARCs of my next book, Make It Last, will be out soon, I think. I don't even really know, but they will be by the end of the year. So yeah, it's kind of crazy because yeah, it's like kind of one after another. They really, especially these digital first books, they can really get them out fast.
Right. And I know that's a big problem. A lot of the people really enthusiastic about self-publishing, one of the problems they had with traditional publishing is that it is very much hurry up and wait. And it's good to see that some publishers are actually pushing forward and really trying to get books, especially books in a series, out closer together. Because, you know, as a reader of several series, you get to a certain point and it's like, well, I want to read the next book. They either wait until the next one comes, you know, until the series is finished. Like you wait for the whole series of Breaking Bad to finish and then you go binge watch it on Netflix. or, you know, they buy the first two and then they have to wait for the third. It's some weird combination.
I do think now things are, I just feel like, yeah, the instant gratification now is everyone wants everything right now, whether it's because of, Netflix, where they put like Orange is the New Black and it's like all on at once and you can just completely binge watch the crap out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I think even with self-publishing, yeah, I mean, some of these people are putting out books really quick. And I do think that traditional publishing, I don't think necessarily like YA and books that are coming out as hardcover and things like that, those are taking still longer. But I would say the romance industry and the publishers are really, I do think they're trying to really come up with ways to get the books out quickly and feed that, you know, demand. And I kind of applaud them for that, because I do think they're really trying to step up, because, you know, I know publishing, everyone thinks of it as a dinosaur, but I don't, in my experience, they move quickly.
Well, romance and new adult are two categories big in self-publishing. And so I guess the publishers really are trying to combat the the quick turnaround on the self-publishing side by putting out these books closer together or more quickly than they might have otherwise.
Yeah, that's what I think. I think that for a while there, it was okay to take so long. And if you're, George R. R. Martin, you can take forever publishing the Game of Thrones series. But, that's another thing, too. I think romance especially is just quick. I also think what's funny, I just actually posted a graphic on my Facebook page that said a lot of romance readers are binge readers as well. Mm-hmm. I just think they're read at a different, they're just read differently than, say, you'll read like a sci-fi novel or fantasy. And I don't think that means one is better or worse. I just think it's just how they're read, the type of consumer who reads them.
Right. Now you have, so you said you self-published this first series before you traditionally published the Buller University series.
No. I just self-published one book.
It wasn't a series. Yeah. Okay. Well, okay. Do you have any manuscripts in the drawer somewhere that you're hoping will see the light of day, or like, nope, never gonna see these again?
Yeah, I wrote an entire new adult series that I don't think I'll ever bring out. It was a really good learning experience for me writing them, and I kind of learned how to plot. But no, I don't think I'll ever publish those. I do have a couple manuscripts in my drawer that I hope to. I mean, one of those is with my agent now to read, so we'll see. But yeah, I do have some that I hope to get published. But then I also have some that no, I don't. I have a lot of half finished ones too. I know. I think Chuck Wendig had like this blog. I love his blog posts. Love them. But he had this
terrible
blog post.
Minds, yeah.
Yeah. But he had this blog post that was like, if you have like 5 million half-finished manuscripts, you're doing it wrong. And I'm like, oh, crap. It was so funny. I was like, I have a lot of unfinished manuscripts in my... I knew what he meant, though. He was like, you got to finish something. Because you do. I mean, no one's going to publish... I understood where he was going with it. But it was just really funny because I was like, oh, my God, I have a lot of half-finished manuscripts in my computer.
I'm going to ask a few recurring questions of all my guests, so try to think of me as the James Lipton of book-related podcasting.
No problem.
Was there a person in your life who influenced you into becoming a writer?
Yes. I can name very specifically. It was my 7th grade teacher, and her name was – she changed it halfway through because she got married. So I no point even saying her name because I think it changed. But anyway, so she was awesome. She was one of those teachers that was just so enthusiastic about everything. So enthusiastic about everything. And at the time, I mean, I was in 7th grade. I wasn't really, when I was in school, they weren't pushing you. I think nowadays they're like pretty much pushing you into like some sort of field when you're like in kindergarten. But at the time when I was in school, you didn't have to choose a career path or anything. They didn't even do that in high school yet. So I obviously wasn't even thinking about that. She was a language arts teacher. And so we did a lot of writing and I loved it. I mean, I really, really enjoyed writing. And I'd always written like little stories when I was a kid, but I guess I just didn't like really fall in love with it until I started writing for my language arts teacher, and she loved my stuff. Oh my gosh, she encouraged me. She said I was talented, and I entered like a local state contest, and that was really cool. It was like a scholastic contest, and I remember like one of my stories got some sort of placement. I don't know what they do. I think they like give 100 silver medals and then, that kind of thing. And I remember we went up to like the state capitol. I live in Pennsylvania. So we went up to Harrisburg and they had like all these stories displayed in the I think like in Strawberry Square, if anyone's familiar with Harrisburg. And it was very, very cool. And I got this recognition and I just thought it was really fun and I loved it. I loved writing. So, and I'd always loved reading. So it was kind of like a natural fit for me. And pretty much from then on, I decided I wanted to write. I mean, I ended up going the journalism track in college, but yeah. So she was it. She definitely was the one who really showed me how much I loved it and that I was actually decent at it.
That's great. Hey, and you had your first publication credit. So there you go.
Yeah.
What was the one book that stuck with you throughout your life? Something that you maybe read for school or something maybe your teacher recommended to you? So what was the book and what was it about the book that made it impossible to let go?
You know, it's really, this is weird since I write romance, but that two of my favorite books are actually like romantic tragedies. I loved The Great Gatsby and I still read it every year. I don't know what sometimes I wonder what it is about that book. And I think it's because it's sad, but it's beautifully written. And I just love that book. I love it so much. I think all the characters have like weird motivations and yeah, I just love how it's written. And then I also always loved The Thornbirds, another horribly romantic tragedy. I mean, it is so sad. I can't even, sometimes like I tell people that I really love that book and they're like, what is wrong with you? Only because it's not, it's a very good book and they made like a TV show about it. I am just like, it's so sad. And actually one of the characters, it is horrible too. I named my son after one of the characters and then spoiler alert, but the guy drowns. Like, why did I do that? I don't even know. But I just love that book. I thought it was so real and it was like epic. It was like an epic saga, you know, that like spans like 20 years and it's crazy. And I will say the most recent book that really stuck with me is The Book Thief. That book tore me apart.
I still have to read that.
I loved that book. It just was so, I like historical books. I like historical fiction a lot. And it was just so powerful. It just meant so much. And, you know, it's not a romance. It's just a beautiful, amazingly written story. And then I'll also read anything Dennis Lehane writes. I love Dennis Lehane. I think he's a genius. If I ever met him, I would probably cry. I think he's amazing. Yeah. Like I have The Drop, his latest, like right, in paperback, and I don't buy paperbacks very much anymore. And I went and I bought his and I'm so excited.
Is there a character in another story, not one that you've written, that you wish you had created?
I will say an incredibly intriguing character that I read that I would have loved to create and like explore. And I don't remember her name. She was the main character of Invisible Monsters by Chuck Palahniuk. Have you ever read that?
I haven't.
It's insane. Because it's Chuck Palahniuk, and it's crazy. And she is so messed up, but she's so interesting. She's like, she was a supermodel or something. She was like, you know, beautiful, beautiful model. And she was in an accident that basically like took off her face. I mean, so she's like, she's very deformed then facially. Oh, she's like kind of creepy because... And she's got these like weird friends, and she's actually like has a friend, and she's like slipping him like estrogen pills because she's like trying to get back at him about something. I mean, it's so weird. It is so weird. I mean, when I read that book, I was like, oh my God, this character is so interesting. I just think Chuck's writing is just, you know, I mean, the Fight Club was an awesome book, and just the way he writes is just really interesting. So yeah, now I forget her name. How bad is that? But I probably the main character of Invisible Monsters because it was just so complicated and unique.
I've added that to my TBR list.
Yeah, I also really like the main character of Shutter Island by Dennis Lehane.
Oh, okay.
The movie had Leonardo DiCaprio in it, but that main character was really, really cool too.
My TBR pile gets bigger and bigger, and my R pile seems to not grow as quickly.
Mine's the same. It's bad.
So along those same lines, is there a book you wish you'd written? So something that you read that you were like, man, I wish I was the one who had done this because this is just crazy good.
I don't know. Like I said, it's weird that I'm not even naming romance books, but because that's what I write and I really like it. But,
I did find that interesting that the two books that really interested you growing or that held on to you growing up were not romance books.
No. Well, to be honest, romance was not what I really read. And there wasn't a reason for it. I wasn't like, ew, romance. It wasn't like that. It just, that's not what I gravitated towards. But then I started reading it as I got older and I really love it. And I think I'm good at writing it. So that's kind of another reason I've written it. I like writing it. It's really, for me, it's fulfilling to write. And so there are a lot of books I love, but I just am not the type of writer. Like when I was younger, I totally thought I was going to write like the next, not, I'm sorry, I shouldn't say I totally thought I was going to. I wanted to write like Cold Mountain. I don't know if you know what that is, but that's like a historical, it's a historical romance, but it's not romance per the romance industry because it doesn't end happily. The one person dies. And I remember I wanted to write like a huge epic historical saga like that. And maybe I will someday, but at this point in my life, that's not the type of writer I am. So that's not what I'm going to write. But anyway, so I usually loved like a lot of historical stuff. I will say I always wished, I also really love Lauren Hillebrand, and she wrote like Seabiscuit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know what that is, but that's
the one with the... Yeah, about the racehorse.
Yeah, and I always kind of wish that I would have loved to write that because I would have loved to like interview, because that was based on a true story. I mean, she would have had to do so much research, which she did. I actually think she was like, I thought I read about her story, unless I'm wrong, but I thought she was like sick and like did a lot of it from her bed. But anyway, yeah, I would have loved to write something like that, something like historic. And actually, Dennis Lehane wrote a historic book set in Boston. And he actually talks about the big like molasses spill. And that was called Any Given Day. I would have loved to have written that too. It was so fascinating. He talked all about like the mixture of different cultures in that during that time period, and the like unsafe working conditions of the police. And yeah, it was just, that book is so good. I've read that book like 3 times.
I'm noticing a theme with the books that you love, in that they're historical. There's a lot of research. Does that harken back to your journalism days?
I think it does. I really think it does. I really love research, and a lot of my books, I try to do some sort of research. I think it's fun. And like I said, one day I would love to write like a big historical book. I just, at this point in my life, I guess I would actually think, I don't think I'm ready for it. As a writer, I really don't. I think I still need to work on my craft, and I need to work on, I'm not saying like, I do think I'm still challenging myself with what I'm writing now, but I just think, yeah. And it would also be a book that would take much longer than what I write. I mean, now sometimes I finish books and like, I write them in like a month and a half, whereas, you know, a big historical book with a lot of research would probably take a year or two. But yeah, I think it does. I love historical books with lots of research. Because I just think they're fascinating.
Do you think it would be difficult once you did cross over from the pure romance side into maybe historical romance or even just general historical fiction? Do you think it would be difficult to cross over from one into the other under the name Megan Erickson? Do you feel you would pick a pseudonym?
I don't know. I think it depends what type of historical I did. Like if I did something like Cold Mountain that doesn't end happily, it wouldn't be called a romance because technically in the romance... I almost say romance with a capital R. If you're talking about strictly romance industry, it has to end with a happily ever after, or it's not called. It can have romantic elements, but it's not called a romance. I think I honestly think if I wrote a book that wasn't romance, I would do a pen name. But if I did like say a historical romance, I actually think I would just use Megan Erickson. I just don't know if it would be what I would end up writing. I don't know. I do have an idea for a historical romance that would end happily. I just don't know when I'll write it and if I'm ready for it yet. It's like Civil War time period. So I just don't know. So I think if I did write historical romance, yes, I'd keep Megan Erickson. But I think if I ended it tragically, then I think I would use a pen name just because you really have to separate that. Because I wouldn't want someone to think they're reading a romance and then like a character dies at the end. That would be
right.
I mean, that's almost like mean to the reader. So I wouldn't do that. And as of now, I'm known as a romance author, so I wouldn't want to confuse people.
What pulled you into writing romance, considering you grew up reading less romantic books?
I know. Okay, this is – I don't often admit this. Okay, so I hadn't really read romance. I know my mom sometimes read like Danielle Steele, but it wasn't really my thing. I read a lot of Stephen King when I was younger too. And then, dun, 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 everyone's talking about 50 Shades of Grey. And I'm like, okay, I have to read this book because everyone's talking about it. And I read it and was not my favorite thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, and there was a lot of talk, like, you know, there have been romance writers for so long. Like, if you're looking for romance, maybe try this. And I thought, you know, I'm going to see what other romances out there, like, are they kind of all like 50 Shades of Grey or what? Am I missing something? Like, and you know, this was a genre I hadn't read. So maybe I should get involved, you know, in reading it, let's expand. And cause I never really read much young adult either. I don't know why, I just kind of like almost skipped over it other than Harry Potter. So I started reading other romance books and I just really started to fall in love. I read like Jill Shalvis and Victoria Dahl and Charlotte Stein, and I just loved how they wrote. It made me happy. The books made me so happy. And they gave me like, you know, butterflies in my stomach. And I just loved how they made me feel. And I loved how everything was happy. Well, I mean, the end was happy, you know, and I love how they could almost make me feel that it wasn't going to end happy, but yet they pull it off in the end. A lot of people are like, if you know the ending, why do you read? And it's all about the journey. You know what I mean? So, I really started to love it. And then this is what happened. So I wrote a book, my first book that I self-published, which is called Anchor Me. So I wrote this book and I was like, it's women's fiction. And that's what I queried it as. I got tons of rejections, which I should have because it was a mess at the time. So it was my query was a mess, and so was that manuscript. And then I hired an editor to work with me on it. She read it, and she's like, "You realize you wrote a romance?" And I'm like, "Did I?" And she's like, "You wrote a romance. I mean, really, it follows like a traditional romantic fiction arc." And I'm like, "Huh, who would have thunk it?" And I realized I did. And she's like, it's good. Like, there's nothing wrong with it, but this is what you wrote." And then I was kind of like, well, if that's the way my mind works, like maybe, cause I, you know, struggled with books before that. And I was like, maybe as Stephen King said, you know, be the writer you are, don't fight against what you are.
Right.
And then I kept writing and I realized, oh, I think I'm pretty good at this. So that's why I write it now. And I do love it. I mean, now I read romance. I mean, now I love it. And that's what I read. It was almost like, I mean, I still love reading all those other books. It just was hard because that's what I grew up reading. So for me, those are still pretty impactful. But I would say now, obviously, there's tons of romance books that impact me as well.
What do you think the worst question to ask a writer is?
I really hate, like, where'd you get your ideas? Only because, like, I don't hate it. I shouldn't say that. If people want to ask me that, that's fine. But it's really hard because I just want to say everywhere. I mean, sometimes I'll wake up with a weird story idea. Sometimes I'll see a guy walking or a woman walking down the street and I'll think, they got some interesting clothes on, or I don't know, they have a cool haircut. I wonder what they're doing. I wonder where they're going. And, you know, you get inspiration from everywhere. And it's kind of hard to pinpoint. So at least for me, it's really hard for me to pinpoint where I get an idea because sometimes they just happen.
Isn't that the same question Stephen King hates too?
Oh, is it?
I think, yeah. Did you ever read On Writing?
Oh yeah, I have it. It's like, I'm looking at it right now. It's on my bookshelf.
Yeah, I think in the beginning it might be in the prologue, it might just be in the first chapter, but he says like the worst question or the question he hates getting asked the most is where do you get your ideas? Because that's exactly it. You get them from everywhere.
Yeah, it's really hard. I mean, I'll answer it, but it's kind of a lame answer. It's not like I can be like, I dream every idea and when I wake up I write it down. Like that's just not right. I don't have a cool answer.
Where can people find you?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter like all the time. probably too much. My handle is my name, Megan Erickson, MEGANERICKSON _. And yeah, I tweet a lot. And then I also use my author Facebook page a lot as well. So yeah, I'm online a lot. And then I do go to signing events if you're local to me because I'm in Pennsylvania. I have a signing in Philly actually in November, and then I have another one in February in Philly, which I'm really excited about. And I'll be going to the Romantic Times Book Lovers Convention in Dallas in May, and I will be signing there as well.
You also, do you have an author website, a blog or anything?
Yes. Oh, I'm kind of neglectful with my website. I mean, I update it like with like my latest news, but I don't just like blog about random stuff. I just don't. Honestly, all my random stuff is usually on my Facebook page. Okay. I post random stuff all the time there. But yeah, my website is just meganerickson.org.
Megan, thank you so much for coming on. This has been great.
Yeah, no, thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun.
We'll have links to all of Megan's books in the show notes. And remember, don't judge a book until it's covered.